Evolutionary.org Raw Podcast. This is your host, Steve Smee. I am with the Mason himself, Masonic Bodybuilder. We have another cool episode. How you doing out there in the Canada?
It's fantastic, buddy. We've had a couple good weeks of summer. It finally came, and now it's gone. We're going to be getting into fall real quick.
Yeah, it was actually really hot over the weekend. We had some really cool NFL games. It was actually in the 90s, I think, for the Green Bay game. That's how hot it was. They had fans on the sideline. And then now for the Green Bay game on Thursday, it's going to be in the 50s. So, we had a really strong cold front come through, cooling everyone down. So let's talk a little bit about NFL over the weekend. We had some really awesome games. It was probably the most exciting weekend of football I can remember. We had some – first of all, what I saw was these 0-2 teams that really, really bounced back that looked like they were absolute shit. I'll give you an example. What about a team like the Jets? They were 0-2. Everyone wrote them off as going 0-16. They absolutely dominate in their game at home. Another team that absolutely had an amazing game was the Bears. They're 0-2. Nobody picked them to beat the Steelers. And they dominate the Steelers the whole game. It shouldn't even have been an overtime game because they blocked the field goal and the guy start acting stupid. He got to the 1 yard line and he had the ball knocked out of his hand, so they end up getting a field goal instead of getting a touchdown on that. So it shouldn't even went to overtime. You had the Saints, who looked like absolute shit the first 2 weeks, worst defense in the history of the NFL. They shut down the Panthers. They hold the Panthers to only 150 some yards passing and less than 100 yards rushing. And they win 34-13 in Carolina. Carolina was a team that was 2-0 that some people had going to the Super Bowl this year. And they absolutely shocked them. We had the Chargers almost upset the Chiefs. They were in that game till the end. We had the Bengals should have beat the Packers. They were ahead in that game. They were ahead at halftime 21-7. And then they let the Packers come back, and the Packers won that in overtime. But the Bengals were 0-2. Everyone wrote them off, and they came out, really playing hard. They should have won that game. We had some amazing games. We had the Rams put up 41 points. Granted, it was against the 49ers, but still, that's a lot of points to put up. I think that was a Thursday night game last week. But, so we had some really cool games. Another game, the Raiders in Washington. Everyone picked the Raiders to win that game. Raiders were 2-0. They looked dominant in the first two games. And then Washington holds Derek Carr to only 118 yards passing and Marshawn Lynch to 18 yards rushing. And they basically dominate them. They basically, just 27-10, just a complete domination. And then we saw the Giants offense finally wake up. They scored 24 points in the fourth quarter after not scoring a touchdown so far, to begin the season. So it was just an amazing week, but it just proves anything can happen. And what about the Jaguars, Matt? The Jaguars in London, they fucking shellacked the Ravens 44-7. I actually came out of a class. I was doing a yoga class that morning, and I turn on my radio, and I see it was like 34-0, the score. And I was like, there must be something wrong with my Sirius. This can't be a correct score. How the fuck are the Jaguars up 34-0? And then, it just blows your mind. Flacco had like 30 yards passing in that game. It's just – anything can happen, guys, in the NFL. That's the beauty part of the NFL to me. This is why I love the NFL. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, there's so much parity in football. Like, it's unlike any other sport. But at the same time, when you look at the Super Bowl winners, it's not. It's the same teams every year. So throughout the season, it really is like anybody can beat anybody. Unfortunately, this weekend, I had no TV and I had no internet. So I didn't get to have my usual Sunday. Sundays, I usually do nothing. Honestly, I watch football and I sit around and I get some shit done around the house. That's kind of my catch up day. I'll do a meal prep, you know, for the week, that kind of thing. So I had to kind of follow everything on my phone, on my regular internet that I do have, and watch my Bills get a win, which was nice to see. So they're 2-1. They're tied with New England, and AFC is my bread and butter. I always, you know, I'll watch as many AFC games as I can. But what I did notice in the NFC is a lot of people talking about the NFC East is, you know, who's good? Or are they all just mediocre teams in that division? I mean, the Giants probably have one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen. That can't go on forever. You know, that you can't try to make up for that. I mean, Washington, Dallas, like Philadelphia, who's going to take that division? I have no idea what's going to happen. It's probably going to be one of those years where you got, you know, an 8-8 or a 9-7 team that's going to make it through there. I couldn't predict it, to be honest with you. But, you know, anybody that starts off the season 0-3, you know, already it's going to be a tough time trying to dig out from that to get yourself back into a playoff spot. In football, you can put yourself behind if you know, don't get a win here and there.
I have something called Red Zone, which is basically nonstop highlights, commercial free, and that goes from 1 o'clock through, you know, 7:30. So I can basically, I don't miss anything. It's really awesome. I don't know. Do you guys have that up there in Canada?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. And that's really, it costs $5 a month, or it comes with a sports package with my cable company for $10 a month. So I basically pay $10 a month and I get that. It's so worth the money. It's actually better than the Sunday ticket, because the Sunday ticket, you miss so much shit because you're trying to flip around, you know, to see the games. But the Red Zone, you can just keep it on the Red Zone and you don't miss anything. So it's really, really cool. So, you know, let's talk a little hockey for a few. Matt, you're the hockey expert. And I'm curious, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about Vegas? Because Vegas has an expansion team. And I know that they, a lot of teams made deals with them. It was a little weird expansion draft because so many teams try to basically trade away bad contracts to them and that sort of thing. So I've heard so many mixed things. I've heard things, people say, oh, Vegas are going to have a really good expansion team. I've had people say they're going to have a really bad one. So tell us a little bit about what you think. Do they have a good lineup?
So I would pick them to finish last. They're set up much better than the last few expansion teams, you know, like when San Jose came in and, you know, Tampa and those kind of teams. It's very different now the way that they do it. So when all the other NHL teams had their chance, they could only protect a certain amount of players. So that's the way that it goes. And then whoever they couldn't protect is who ends up in this expansion draft. So what happened is there's all these backdoor deals of teams saying, hey, I really wanted to protect this guy, but I couldn't. So I'll give you this if you don't pick him. So that was a lot of the deals going on. Or Vegas would pick them, and then somebody would make a deal to trade for them. There was so much. It's impossible to even get into it. There's so many complexities. There were 3, 4, 5 team deals going on. But in the end, what it gives them is a better pool of players to choose from. Now, I looked through their entire roster today, and there were only 2 players that looked to be, you know, to have any significance at all. One we've mentioned before is their goalie, Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a good, solid goalie. Is he going to win, you know, win games on his own? Probably not, for the most part. Maybe a few here and there, but he's good. He's a good number one goalie. And then James Neal is probably their best forward. But besides that, it really is a lot of the other team's garbage, you know, is what they picked up. So it's going to take some time. I mean, they got good GM. They got a good coach. So it's just a matter of getting started. Like I said, I can't see them really finishing anywhere but last. They're going to be in the Pacific Conference. So, you know, you're going against teams like Anaheim, Edmonton, San Jose, Calgary, that all made the playoffs last year. And then you even got teams like LA, who didn't make the playoffs, but they're, you know, a threat every single year. So they're going to have a really tough time over there. But, you know, it's really exciting that the NHL was willing to be the first team to put it, your first league to put a professional team in Vegas, you know, and hopefully it does succeed. The challenge they're going to have is, what is their customer base? What are those season ticket holders? Because you can't survive if they're all going to be tourists. You know, there should be enough corporate money for the boxes and that, but it can't just be casinos giving away tickets. You have to actually build a base of people that live in the surrounding area as your season ticket holders to succeed. So that's really what, you know, what we're going to have to wait and see on with them.
There's one less team in one of the divisions in the West. Are they going to do another expansion team, you think, in the near future?
Here's the thing that's really tough. Now it's unbalanced. So now the Central only has seven teams where the Pacific has eight. So the next team, logically, that would have come in, and we thought it might have happened this year, is Quebec. Right? Quebec City is looking to get a team back. Everything's in place. They should be able to support a team. I have no doubt about it based on the people. There's, you know, ownership groups, the arena, everything. The problem is you can't really put them in the West. And so unless you're willing, you know, to rejig all the divisions and conferences and everything, which I don't think they're willing to do, the solution is going to be when Seattle's ready. Because that naturally, you know, that's obviously a Western Conference team, and they fill right in there. So I think as soon as they're ready, that's the next expansion to happen.
They never had a team in Seattle or Portland. Wow, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, unless way, way, way back, but I mean.
Okay. And then really quick, can you give us your picks in those in the West, like your top two, three things that really you thought really improved over the summer, and teams that kind of fell off? Do you think Chicago will still be good?
Chicago will still be good for now. They didn't really make any significant moves, and they still have their core, so they're going to be a threat every year. So Chicago's definitely up there. The team I look at over the next 5 to 10 years is Edmonton, because they locked up Leon Draisaitl for 8 years. They locked up Connor McDavid for 8 years. They acquired Ryan Strome. So they're really set. They had a phenomenal year last year. They finished second in the division, which put them fourth in the conference. So they're the team I really look at. And I think Nashville can really keep going. I'm going to say, I'll give you my top five. I'll say, not in any order, will be Chicago, Edmonton, Nashville. I'll say Minnesota, and I'll throw maybe Anaheim. Anaheim always seems to have a good team year after year.
Yeah, they're scary, yeah.
Yeah, so I throw them in there too.
What about like one or two shitty teams? You think Vegas finishes, you know, one of the
Vegas
worst?
Will be down there. Colorado's still no good. And Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't seem to move off of the Sedin twins. They're older. They're still productive, but they need to change directions desperately. Ryan Miller's gone now, at least, you know, so they're able to move on in that sense. But they really have to change directions.
And then New Jersey had the number one pick in the draft lottery. So they changed the draft lottery, basically, where the last five teams all have the same chance of winning it, correct?
That wasn't the case last year, but that will be this year, I believe.
Okay, so last year New Jersey won it, even though Colorado was the worst team. Did New Jersey draft a player kind of like McDavid or Stamkos or something like that that's going to come in like their first season or two and really change the direction of the team? Or did they draft a guy who's more of a, you know, long-term guy for like three, four
Absolutely
years?
Absolutely not. It was one of the weakest drafts I've seen. I honestly don't even know the guy's name, and I just looked at it the other day. There, even the top five guys, there was really nobody this year that's going to make any significance, you know, make any team any different, at least this year, the next few years. It was just extremely weak.
Yeah, so it looks like looks like if you're not going to be able to tank anymore in the NHL, you're going to have to you're not going to be able to just tank and try to get the number one pick like in years past. So it's going to be a little different. I think other leagues should look at that as well, especially like NBA, because some of those fans are sick of their teams losing every year just to get a top pick. So. But we'll definitely as NHL season gets started, it's gonna start pretty soon. So we'll definitely hit that topic again and update you guys on Matt's thoughts on that. He's the expert on NHL. So let's get into a little bit stimulants pre-workout. We get a question about this all the time. So let me just say this: stimulants. When you talk stimulants, you talk about caffeine is the most well-known stimulant. But there's other things as well that are put in fat burners that really give things like a little bump that we see. But caffeine is the main ingredient. And the problem with stimulants pre-workout, and this is, let me explain to you guys some science. So when you take something to speed up your heart rate, which a stimulant will do, does that improve your actual workout? The answer is absolutely not. Because if you think of it this way, when you speed up your heart rate, you get to your maximum heart rate, which with less effort. Okay, so say you're basically in the weight room or you're doing cardio. Do you want your heart rate hitting your max heart rate with less intensity? The answer is no, of course not. You want a more intense workout without hitting your maximum heart rate. The problem is when you use a stimulant, when you have caffeine in your system, you'll notice yourself. It's kind of like RPMs in a car. The RPMs in the car speed up, speed up, speed up, go higher and higher, get to that red part, and they start burning out the engine. So that what happens when you're during your workout. You'll notice you run out of gas on sets quicker. You're gonna run out of energy quicker during your workout. When you're doing cardio, you're gonna be slowed down. There's something gonna be slowing you down. So really, the trick is we want to avoid stimulants when we work out. Now, the problem with that is in this high-paced society, a lot of guys have to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock to go to the gym because they have work in the morning. They got to get the kids to school. Then they, after work, they got to go pick up the kids, make them dinner, all this stuff. So their only time to work out is like early in the morning. So in that case, yeah, they need stimulants. So that's our problem. If you're not one of those guys who has that type of lifestyle, and you're having to use stimulants just to get in a workout, that tells me that either you're not sleeping correctly, which is probably the issue, you're not getting enough sleep and you're not sleeping properly, you don't have proper nutrition, you're not getting enough vitamins and minerals in your diet, you're not absorbing them, you could have an underlying medical condition. A lot of people with Crohn's disease don't absorb vitamins and minerals, for example. So you really have to kind of work on improving that. You're not hydrating properly. You're not motivating yourself properly. So those factors can really affect your ability to work out. And the most logical one too is you're so addicted to the caffeine that you've been using for so long that you have burned out adrenal, your adrenal glands are fatigued. So it's like you have to use stimulants just to wake up to work out. So, how do we fix this? Well, we fix this by not getting addicted to these stimulants in the first place. If you're on these pre-workouts every fucking day before you work out, that's not good. You're addicted. Using them once in a while is fine, but using them every day is not fine. And they are, like I said, as I explained earlier, they're going to affect your workout. Now, how do we do the opposite? How do we work out with more intensity without spiking our heart rate so we get a better RPM without burning out our engine? The answer would be Cardarine or SR9009. Both of them actually allow you to push harder in the gym without burning out your engine. So you'll notice the opposite effect. You'll notice you're not huffing and puffing, you're not winded as easy. and you can actually push harder without being winded. So stimulants, you know, not just the caffeine, clenbuterol, albuterol, you know, any of these, DMP, anything that stimulates the body, even though DMP is not a stimulant, it's still going to, you know, cause that effect on your heart rate. I really am not a proponent of stimulants at all. But I realize that in today's society, some people need them because our schedules are so fucked up because we overload ourselves with our 45-hour, 50-hour-a-week job. Some people work 70 or 80 hours a week. If you're an attorney, you're working like 70 or 80 hours a week, you know? So it's ridiculous. So, Matt, I know I kind of went on for a long time, and can you tell us a little bit about your strategy? Do you use pre-workouts? Do you use caffeine? And what are some tips that you can offer?
So I don't. I have in the past, and I think there's a time and a place for them. I would say if you don't normally train at 5 a.m., if that's not your normal schedule, but you know something happened, you can't get in your normal time, so you have to get up super early today, that's fine. I have no problem. That's the once in a while. Go ahead and use that. At that time, you may not even want to eat that early because you're not used to it. If it happens to be, you know, your normal gym time and you had a really, really shitty sleep for whatever reason, maybe that day is okay. But I'm talking maybe once a week at the most. You should be able to, you know, get yourself ready to work out. Even on an off day, once you get there, you're usually fine. You don't really need a stimulant. So, Steve, let me ask you one quick question. I know you don't use stimulants. Do you get a pump when you work out?
Yes.
Okay. Here's the problem, guys, with stimulants. Caffeine is so common. Everybody uses caffeine, right? And it's getting ridiculous. It used to be 100, 200 milligrams. Now we're getting up to 3 and 4 in most pre-workouts. Caffeine is a vasoconstrictor. What that means is it constricts your blood vessels. It causes you to not get a pump. So now all of a sudden you're not getting that pump. So what do these pre-workouts have to do? They have to add in things like citrulline, citrulline malate, agmatine to try to do the opposite, to be vasodilators to cause those blood vessels to increase just so you can get a pump. Okay, if you don't use strong stimulants like that, you'll get a pump just fine. But because these things are loaded with caffeine, that's why they have to put these other things in, because you're not able to get the pump now. Now all of a sudden you need another drug to counteract the drug you're using. And we're not talking about anything that's going to benefit you. We're just talking about something to make you feel like you're hyped up, I guess. So for me, lately I love to train fasted because I have more energy. I feel great. It might not be for everybody. Try it if you want. Just drink water and go work out. I have a lot of clean energy. If you're going to have a meal, that's the best way to fuel yourself other than stimulants. Have some complex carbs. Have something like oatmeal. Not a ton, right? Just enough in your system an hour and a half before you train. Something like a piece of fruit. Throw a couple eggs in there for some protein. And that's really all you need. I find the key is to be hydrated before you train. And this is the same for any of you guys that are into different sports. If you're athletes and, you know, you're a hockey player, football, basketball, soccer, the key is to be hydrated before you start. Because once you start playing your sport and you're chugging water on the bench, you can't catch up. It's the same thing with weight training. It's really hard to catch up once you're training. You need to be hydrated before you start. So I think those tips will really help you have a clean workout. Steve mentioned Carterin and SR9009. Those are fantastic options. Exactly the way he described it is how it benefits me. I notice it a lot more during cardio, where I can just keep going and going, and I don't get super winded where I normally would. I'm not the biggest fan of cardio, so anything that can make it easier, I'm all for that. So try those, try fasted, try the meal, and see how you respond. It may take some time, to get off the stimulants. You know, you might have some headaches, but in the end, in the long run for your health and for your workouts, it's going to be much better off if you just transition away from using those.
You brought up a really good point about pumps. Also, inflammation in the muscle. When you work out, you get inflammation, and you want that. A lot of people are like, lactic acid, you know. You hear these gurus on message boards always say, oh, lactic acid is bad. We need to flush lactic acid. No, lactic acid is not bad. Lactic acid is good. Inflammation is good. When you work out, you're breaking up your muscle fibers, and your body is releasing that inflammation to repair it. That's your repairing mechanism. When you take a painkiller or even an aspirin, doesn't have to be a prescription painkiller like Tramadol or something. It can be an aspirin, it can be a Tylenol, whatever. You'll notice your pumps are down when you're taking them. You'll notice that you don't get those pumps. You don't notice you don't get that inflammation when you work out. Your muscles don't get full when you work out. You don't get that blood and nutrients rushing into your muscles. That's not your imagination. That's actually happening. So if you're using these painkillers before your workout, or even that morning of, or even the day before, like things like Tramadol are in your system. They have a very long half-life. They're in your system like for a day, okay? So I think Tramadol has like an 8 or 12 hour half-life. But in any event, you should not be taking these, all right? If you are lifting weights, you should not be taking these. Now, power lifters are different. Power lifters actually will use these because they don't want pumps. They don't want inflammation. They don't want their muscles getting full when they're lifting heavy-ass weights because they want to lift heavy-ass weights. Their goal is to move heavy fucking weight. Their goal isn't to get a pump and not to get the vascularity and get, you know, build that, you know, that striation and that muscle, you know, those rip muscles. Their goals are just to push heavy ass weight. So their goals are different. But I'm not saying if you're lifting heavy weight and powerlifting, you should get started on painkillers either, because that's not healthy. Okay, you're going to end up injuring yourself long term. So don't do that either. But I do know powerlifters who do that. Good for them. They can lift heavy ass weights. But when they get to 50, 60 years old, they're going to be crippled. Okay, so, you know, if that's what you want, go ahead and do it. So, I mean, a lot of this shit, you know, that's being sold, you know, these pre-workout supplements, people who are saying take aspirin or take Tramadol or take a painkiller before workouts, it's just bad advice, guys. The only thing you should take pre-workout is, like what I said, you need to hydrate, food, if you need that energy, those carbs, complex carbs are good, something like a sweet potato, some rice, that's good, some eggs, you know, a little protein. That Carterine, SR9009, a great pre-workout. You know, and then DSpark from ntbm.com. DSpark is a great pre-workout. It does not contain stimulants, but it will increase your pumps. So that's a great way to, you know, to really take advantage of your workout. So we're zooming right through this. The next topic, this is a steroid topic, as I promised you guys, and this is a good one. Tren, Matt, you just ran Tren. We have complaints all the time from people about heat from the Tren, hyposymptoms, which are low blood sugar symptoms, and then they get the inflammation, either stomach issues or they might get phlegmy on Tren and all this stuff. Let me first explain why people get, you know, inflammation on Tren, okay? And then I'll let Matt kind of explain the other two things, because I know Matt studied this thoroughly. But Tren is really unique, and we know from cattle studies, Tren originally was designed for humans. It's not a cattle drug originally, but now it is used as a feedlot drug in cattle. So there have been cattle studies. Reading through cattle studies, we know that Tren increases something called PGF2A, which is an inflammatory prostaglandin. And that's why when you use Tren, you get inflamed. It becomes harder to breathe. You're huffing and puffing, okay, on Tren. You start getting stomach bloat on Tren. It's inflammation. You start noticing you get acid reflux. Again, it's the inflammation in the stomach. It really tears your stomach up, okay, because of that inflammation. Inflammation in the body has different side effects that affect your stomach, your sinuses, you know, all kinds of things, okay? So, you know, That's why you have those types of issues. Hard time breathing, inflammation in the sinuses. The other things, the heat and the hypo. Matt, you know, can you tell us a little bit about why people get hot on Tren and why do people get those hypo, low blood sugar symptoms? And also tell us how much of that did you get? Because I know you said that you stopped the Tren because you were sick and tired of it.
Yeah, the heat, man, I'm telling you, that is the absolute worst thing. If you guys are thinking about using Tren, this side effect is probably more common than any of the other ones. You will get hot as fuck, okay? It may not affect you as much during the day. You may not notice it because you're busy, you know, you're inside, outside, you're doing shit, you know, it's easy to get hot, right? You're working out. But when you go to bed and you wake up at 2 a.m. and you're soaked, it sucks. Okay, this is, it's all related too. So the heat and the hypo can be related. What's going to happen is, like I said, you're going to wake up probably in the middle of the night. You may not be soaked, but you might be really, really hot. And that makes it very difficult to sleep. So that can happen for a few reasons. One of the reasons can be that you're having those hypo symptoms. So you're having the low blood sugar. So what you can do, it's going to ruin your sleep, but you can get up and you can get some really quick carbs to eat. Anything that's going to be basically sugary or just a, like Steve's recommended, pancakes. You know, you can just buy frozen ones. It takes 30 seconds and you can just pop one of those and you're good to go. Something like that can help you if it happens to you in the middle of the night. I know JP, we've had on the podcast a bunch of times. He's an older guy. He's in his late 60s, I believe. He's, you know, got more experience than all of us combined. And he said honey always works for him. So that's a really good carb you could try to use too. The other thing is you can try to spread your carbs out more throughout the day. Tren will just chew through these carbs, right? It's a very good nutrient partitioner, but you need to have them there because it will burn through them very fast. Now that effect will go down the more you use it, so you can't expect it to last forever. A lot of guys will report, you know, the first one or two times they run Tren, they can really lean up on top of building a good amount of muscle and strength. That may not happen the more you use it. And the more you use it, you'll become more insulin resistant too, which isn't something you want. So don't abuse this compound. It really is extremely powerful. Use it moderate doses and don't use it all the time and don't use it long term. So I plan to run it my full 12 weeks with my cycle. I didn't make it that far. After 8 weeks, I had enough. And the issue was, I found the side effects noticeable before the positive effects were noticeable. So I was getting the heat before I even really started to notice the strength and size gains. So I knew it was going to be a long road, and I was only running 300 milligrams a week. I mean, some of you guys run, you know, more than that. So the side effects can be very individual, but I would say if you're going to run it, definitely count on at least having the heat.
Another recommendation for the heat, I tell guys on the forums all the time, and people don't seem to want to listen, but it's really simple. It's really fucking simple advice. And that is, don't run it during the summer. If you're in North America, don't run it during our summers. It's fucking hot during the summer, even where Matt lives in Canada. It gets up in the 80s and during the summer, up even where he lives. I mean, it's fucking hot, guys, and it's getting hotter and hotter every fucking year. All right? So don't run it during the summer. Wait till it cools down.
The other thing before we move on, and I know you usually bring this one up when we talk about Tren, is water. You guys need to drink a shitload of water because you always hear you should never be thirsty, right? If you feel thirsty, that means you're dehydrated. So on Tren, it's extremely easy for that to happen. You want to get ahead of it. Kind of like if you guys read Steve's fasting log, it's really, really detailed. You should check it out if you haven't on evolutionary.org. You went through the 10-day water fast. It's similar to that in that you feel like you can't stay hydrated. So on trend, you need to keep drinking water. If you normally are drinking a gallon of water, which is about 4 liters, you're going to probably want to almost double that, to be honest. You know, especially if you're eating a lot of food.
Can you translate liter to gallons for the
American? So for all intents and purposes, a gallon is about 4 liters. It's like 3.75, but it's roughly 4 liters. So you should drink, most people will drink, you know, bodybuilders, a gallon or 4 liters of water per day. You're probably going to want to double it, you know, to be honest, if you're running trend, if you can get that much in, because it's tough. You know, it really is. It's a harsh compound on your body. You know, it can rip people's stomachs apart because it kills the gut flora. It can make you not sleep. It can make you hot. Like, it's no joke, guys. All these things, if you want the gains that it's going to bring you and the strength it's going to bring you, there's going to be a lot of shit to deal with too. So that's why, you know, any veteran will tell you, don't take it lightly. You know, make sure you run 5 cycles, 7 cycles before you try it. It's not because they don't want you to use it and, you know, they want to keep the secret from you. It's because it really is tough. It's tough on the body. You know, guys piss brown when they run this shit. It's not nice on your kidneys either. You know, so when you're using this, on top of any, you know, healthy supplements, things you're going to use, you should even use something like EntuGuard that's going to protect your liver when you run oral steroids, because it's going to do a ton to help out your organs. Because trend just, it beats you up. You know, you're just a punching bag to this stuff. But, you know, that being said, it will be the best thing you use. You'll love it. You'll want to use it again. But you'll learn how to use it. You'll learn to use it the right way and not excessively, so you get the most out of it.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, we keep getting questions on the forums about it. And it's just like guys complain about sides. It's like, yes, it has sides. I mean, this isn't something you know, brand new. We know it has sides. I would say it would rank 9.5 out of 10 if you were to rank steroids based on side effects. 9.5 out of 10, maybe even higher than that. So it's not a surprise. And the longer you use it, you know, the more the sides become really, really a pain in the ass. You'll love it the first few weeks, like Matt said, and then it just becomes a pain in the ass. And it starts affecting your lifestyle, because it's like, you know, you'll be fucking this chick, she'll be riding you, and then like fucking 10 minutes later, you'll be like, holy fuck, like, I'm going hypo. You'll start shaking, and you'll be like, fuck, you know, I need to go fucking have a pancake, because I'm fucking going hypo here. So it's like, it will fucking drain your body. It's you know, it's a hell of a steroid, and one day, once you get experience, definitely you want to use trend, because it's a hell of a steroid, but it does have side effects. So hopefully, you know, the stuff that we're telling you helps you combat those side effects. So Matt, we have an interesting topic.
This is one I really wanted to get into. This will blow your guys' mind. This is why we're the raw, hardcore podcast, because we're going to talk about shit that other people don't, and that, you know, sites just repeat the same garbage, okay? This is something that's a little different, and we can debate, and people will disagree, and I like that. Good. Let's stir the shit pot once in a while. Okay. We always talk about aromatizing compounds. What's one of the most wet compounds out there? It's D-ball. Right, D-ball will blow you up like a water buffalo. So what do we always say? Run aromacin from day one, you know, to keep the water down. Well, you know what? If you're going to run D-ball and you're going to run aromacin to cut the water down, why? Why not just run T-ball that doesn't aromatize? It's going to do the same shit, and it's not going to cause the water retention. Why not do that? So then I got to talking, I mean, what about the guys that want D-ball for the power and the water retention? They want the water. The water is going to give you the mass. The water is going to give you the strength. You know, what about those guys? So we always talk, yeah, it's old school to run Novadex on cycle, right? That's what they used to do before there was anti-estrogens, before they had true aromatase inhibitors like Arimidex, Aromacin, things like that. They used to run Novadex. So what about now, instead of cutting the water, what if you run Nova with D-ball on cycle, right? That will keep the estrogen. It won't stop it from aromatizing. Don't get me wrong. It will keep it at bay while allowing you to add all that water and get extremely powerful. You're going to feel amazing. High testosterone, high estrogen is a recipe for high libido, strength, all those good things that you want. So what about running it that way? It's just kind of an idea that came up recently. And I thought, you know what? It's worth throwing it out there on the podcast. Steve's a steroid expert, so I really wanted to know what he had to say about it. But I think it's something that the guys that love these wet bulking cycles, maybe they want to try it. Try not to limit the water. The only thing you're going to have to do is when you're coming off, you're really going to want to watch that you don't get that gyno rebound. Because what Novadex is doing is it's binding to the estrogen receptor. So you still have that shitload of estrogen in your body. That D-ball is still aromatizing at a really high rate. So if you were to just stop taking Nova, all of a sudden those receptors are free and all that estrogen's in there, and you could probably get gyno really quick. Even months after you stop, it happens. So you're going to have to set yourself up with a way that you're going to come off properly and not have all that estrogen. I don't know, Steve, what do you think of the idea in general?
Well, I've actually done that before. I actually run – D-ball was the first steroid I ever used, and I ran it with Novadex because back in the day, that's the advice everyone would give. No one even knew what Aromacin was back then. Aromacin was very new, and a lot of the information that we had access to was just parroted stuff that was very outdated. There wasn't very many gurus, like brand new gurus. There wasn't podcasts. There wasn't these forums like we have today. So the information you would get were from your bros, you know, your friends, your buddies, stuff like that, or maybe one or two fitness sites online where you had one or two really old school gurus. These guys were like in their 50s or 60s, and they didn't even lift anymore, and they didn't even use really steroids anymore, but they were giving advice based on what they did 10 or 20 years prior. Kind of like Greg Valentino, I would characterize it as that, because Greg Valentino, the advice he gives is really like outdated. Like, he'll tell people to run Letro on cycle. Like, that's how outdated his information is. Like, he doesn't even know what Aromacin is. He doesn't even know what DMP is. I mean, he's so like out of the loop as to what happens today, because he was around 30 years ago, but he doesn't know shit today. So I actually ran it like that, and exactly what you're saying happened. I bloated up like a water buffalo. I gained a shitload of weight. I moved the scale. I was skinny, okay? My strength shot up, but I bloated like crazy. I had the moon face, and it just was the look. I didn't really care the way I looked. I just wanted that scale to move, and I wanted to get stronger. So that's all I gave a shit about. And then when I came off, exactly what you said, I had that rebound. And I had gyno. I had the gyno pop up, and you know, luckily I was able to control it. When I came off, I ran a PCT, and then luckily it went away. But a lot of guys would not be so lucky on that. So I've tried it like that. I would think if you're gonna do that, I would run like Letro or Aromacin. Maybe, you know, when you came off, this way you wouldn't get that rebound. But the thing is, with Letro, you would still get a rebound because Letro is not a suicide AI. So it's a really tough one to really answer. But a lot of guys, a lot of the old school guys, they swear by Novadex. Even guys who are doing TRT, they're like, oh, Novadex is great for gyno. Novadex is great for estrogen. So they still swear by it. So it's one of those things, you know, that you can try. And I think, you know, just remember that if you're gyno prone, it can rebound and it can be an issue. So just be aware of that. But I think it's a really good thing to try, and I really like to hear new things like this.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it might be a better trial for somebody that's running just D-ball, or if they're running it with like a low dose of test. I think if you were to get into, you know, a high test dose plus a high, because everybody wants to run their D-ball at 60 milligrams a day now. You know, when you start running a bunch of things together at high doses that aromatize, I think it's probably going to be too much. So I think it might be something best tested on, you know, more mild. If you're going to run something, you know, like test Deca and D-ball, it's not a good idea. You don't want to use Nova, you know, with a nandrolone on cycle anyway. That's a terrible idea. But, you know, I think it might be, if you're going to try it that way first, just to see how it goes. I mean, you know, we got to stop listening to people that just repeat the same shit over and over and over again, because their name says moderator next to it on a forum, right? That doesn't mean anything. If you don't know what you're talking about, if you have no science backing to what you're saying, if you're just repeating shit, you're going to get called out so quick and nobody's going to listen to what you have to say, you know? So we got to think for ourselves once in a while, and we got to bounce stuff off of each other and really listen and not just say, oh, that's not right, you know, because that's what you've heard a million times. Actually think about it. Think about the science of it. You know, for most of us, for, you know, guys like me, I don't want that water weight, so I'm not going to try it. It's not for me. But for those guys that want the mass and the strength, maybe that is what they want. You know, maybe it is worth it for them to try. So, you know, keep an open mind, guys.
We have a really cool topic that was sent in to Matt. Can you tell us a little bit about what was said? It was about not getting results.
Yeah, so basically this guy was running a cycle. He was running kind of just what we were talking about, test with DECA. And I think he did run a kickstart, an oral kickstart. I'm not sure at this point, but he's 6 weeks through a 12-week cycle, and he said he's not getting the results he wants. Should he up his dose? And I thought, you know what, that's an excellent question. We got to get that on the podcast, because that's so common. So there's so many different avenues to talk about this, but the first thing I would say is it the gear or is it you? Because sometimes our expectations are out of whack. You know, especially the younger guys, they think steroids are magical, and that's really not how they work. They can, you know, they certainly are significant, but you have to have everything else, you know, properly done. You have to have your diet right. You have to be training right. You can't just take steroids and think, you know, you're going to get big and ripped. It's not how they work. So first you're going to want to look at yourself and say, why am I not satisfied? You know, I've gained 6 pounds in 6 weeks. You know what? To me, that's good. If that's quality weight, that's muscle, and you've gained, you know, out of those 6 pounds, 5 pounds, if it's muscle halfway through your cycle, that may not be good in your mind, but that's pretty good overall. Like, you shouldn't be complaining about that. You're not going to gain 30 pounds on a cycle unless it's just water and fat. So are your expectations in line? That's number one. Two, take a look at your diet and training. Be honest with yourself, you know. Are you following your diet? Do you know how much you're eating every day? Are you tracking? Do you need to track? And are you doing it 5 days a week and then fucking off on the weekends and drinking and shit? Or are you following your diet every day? So if your expectations are right, in check, if your diet is there, if your training is there, I wouldn't even up the dose right away. I would look at your source. Is your source good? Most of the gear out there, guys, like, newsflash, it's not good quality. It might say 200 milligrams per milliliter, 250. Reality is most of it's 80, maybe 100. It's half dosed of what it says it is. So, you know, find a good source and, you know, question that. Don't just take one. Come on the forums, look around, ask questions. It's not hard these days to find it. It's not like the old days where you had to find somebody at the gym. So assuming all that's in check, I would want to know what your actual doses are. If you're running, if you're, you know, let's just take testosterone, for example. If the guy's dose was 500, you know, if you want to bump it to 6, maybe 7, that's fine. You know, don't expect miracles from that, but don't be bumping it up to a gram just because you think your results aren't there. I think that's irresponsible. Same thing with your DECA. I'm assuming he's running 300-400 milligrams per week. If your test dose was low, I would say, you know, go ahead, run it at 500, maybe 600 even. If your test dose is at 500, maybe don't go that high. You don't want to have too many side effects, you know, when you start getting to high doses. So, you know, I'm finding most of the time increasing the dose does nothing. It doesn't change the results you're getting because I always find it to be another factor. This question gets asked so often, and I bet you it's 90% plus, you know, when we actually hear back, yeah, I upped my dose, didn't really do anything for me. For most guys, it might just add water weight, to be honest. So, Steve, I don't know what you hear because you talk to a lot of people. You know, they really come to you for advice on steroids and private message you and all this other stuff. So I don't know if you're finding the same thing.
Well, I'll just say this. Look, it's a war. It's a constant war because your body wants to shed muscle and wants to gain fat. You know, in our diets, our lifestyles, our stress, all that shit that we have to go through on a fucking daily basis, we have to deal with fucking idiots, okay? On a daily basis that you have no control over. Even if you do everything right in this world, you still have to deal with fucking stupid ass people. So you're going to be stressed. You know, that's our society. And all those factors play a role in our bodies. So the good thing about steroids is they reduce cortisol in the body, they increase protein synthesis, and they're a really good tool to build muscle, okay? And, you know, they really do work, okay? They do work, but they're just a tool, and you can't expect to just shoot up some steroids in your ass and end up looking like Phil Heath or Jay Cutler. It doesn't work like that. Or you can't shoot up steroids in your ass and become LeBron James or Tom Brady. You know, become a professional athlete just from shooting up steroids. Every time we have an athlete caught with steroids, people are like, oh, he was using steroids, he's a cheater, blah, blah, blah. As if, like magic, the fucking steroids are what made that person a professional athlete. No, it was his genetics. It was his exposure to that particular skill sport growing up. You know, there's different factors. Luck, not to be injured. There's all kinds of things. He had the right coaches. You know, all these things mixed in for him to be a professional athlete. So it's not steroids. Steroids are just a very small piece of the puzzle. I would say, you know, there's 10 different things that make a professional athlete. Steroids is just one of those 10 things. You got to have the other 9 things too. Okay, besides the steroids. But, you know, I would say most guys have used steroids or use steroids in your typical franchise gym. And they look like shit, okay? And that's the reality, you know? And it's because, look, it's a constant war. You could have used steroids for 10 years straight and then just stop working out for a few months and start eating pizza and burgers and crap and milkshakes every day. And you'll look like shit before you know it. All those 10 years are going to go get flushed down the toilet. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It doesn't matter if you keep using steroids or not. So, I mean, it's just a combination of things. But the number one thing, obviously, look for is the steroids legit? You can come on our forums at evolution.org, get an approved source where you know the steroids are legit. But if you didn't use an approved source, you can run blood work. You run blood work. If the blood work, post up the blood work on the forums, And that will tell you, hey, are these steroids legit? If they're legit, then look, maybe your genetics just suck. Some guys don't react well to steroids. Some people have shitty genetics. They have to, you know, they work their ass off. They have their diet on point, and they can't really get anywhere. Sorry. I mean, but the nice thing about weight training is no matter how bad your genetics are, you can still improve. You can still get stronger. You can still build muscle somewhat. You're not gonna be the biggest dude in the gym, okay? But you can still improve. So, you know, it boils down to a lot of things. But I promise you, no matter how smart you think you are, all you 20, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, whatever, even 40, 50-year-olds, you think you know everything about how to train, how to diet. You don't. It's a learning process. Every day you learn how your body reacts. I'm still learning, okay? I'm still learning new things. I know stuff now that a year ago I would have no clue about. So you better be learning about your body and learning to improve. Try different workouts. Change up your workouts. Try different gyms. You know, get a different workout partner. If you do have a workout partner, work out on your own. You know, you got to try different things, guys. And that's the only way you're going to get better. But this is tough. Weight training is tough. And anyone who looks good, you know, that's a hell of an achievement. If you look good, you know, I give you all the credit in the world. So it's not easy to do in today's society. I don't know if, Matt, you want to follow up on anything or you want to move to the final topic really quick.
No, let's move on. Let's get going. We don't got a lot of time, and this is a pretty in-depth topic here. Let's just throw it out there. It's a very simple question with a lot of meaning behind it, and it came from a guy. When is the right time to move in with my girl? Now, we come from different angles on this one, Steve and myself, because I've been married a long time. Steve is with somebody, so you can talk from your angle. But this is, to me, this is the game changer. Okay? Putting marriage aside, when you decide to live together, that is when your life will, you'll have that first big change. So you better be sure you want to be with this person, because when you're not living together, think about it. You only see that person when they're at their best, typically. They're dressing up nice for you. You know, you've got plans to go out. So it's, you know, it's your time together. When you move in together, this is when you learn that girls take dumps. Okay? You learn stuff like that. It's not the pretty part of life, but this is when you learn the reality. This is when you learn that if you don't clean up your dishes, you might be yelled at. You might hear about it. You know, if you're used to sitting at home, living with your mom and dad, and they clean up after you, and then you move in with your girl, and you just think she's going to pick up where they left off, you're going to get your ass kicked. I'm telling you that much. So there's a ton to think about. When is the right time? That's an impossible question to answer. You know that guy that wrote in. We can't answer that for you. What we can tell you is, I guess, more or less what to expect. And the thing is, like, you have to remember, it can be different. Like, if you're moving into her place, if she already has a place, now all of a sudden you're going into her space. So don't expect to move into her apartment, her house, and put your shit in there, right? Don't expect to change the pretty pink bathroom she's got. Don't expect to, you know, put your TV and have your man room that you want. You can't expect that. When you move in together, that's when things really become a 50-50 deal. If you're going in to get a house or an apartment together, you know, that's obviously a lot different. Now you're, you know, throwing both of your ideas out there. So I know when I moved in, it was to my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. It was an apartment she had. And that's like 13 years ago now. But it was a shock to me because I never lived anywhere but with my parents and then kind of a year through my university time with some buddies. And when you're with your buddies, you don't really give a shit and you just kind of do what you got to do when it needs to be done. When you move in with a girl, things are real. They want to have a normal house. They want things to look good. They want to cook. They just don't want to be eating garbage and, you know, pizza like college and stuff like that. So there's a ton to think about. I don't know, Steve, where are you coming in on this?
My last three major relationships were all about 2.5 years each. And we ended up moving in together after, I'd say, a year together. In basically between 1 and 2 years in all three relationships, I think there are three must rules when it comes to moving in together. As a guy, number one, you need to provide the woman some sort of commitment, whether it be a promise ring or an engagement ring. It doesn't mean you have to set a date to get married, but you need to put a ring on her finger because that means that you're serious, okay? It's just like putting a deposit down on a house. You're telling the seller that you're serious. In this situation, that's something important because women need that balance and trust out of you. Otherwise, they're going to think, okay, this guy's moving in with me. We're taking the next step, but he doesn't want to be with me long term. So no matter what the situation is, you need to provide some sort of commitment. Number two, you need to have an easy out on both sides. Because if you do not get along and the shit hits the fan, someone finds out the other one's cheating on them, you don't want to be together, you get in a big fight, and one person says get out, you need to have an easy out. That means you need to have a plan. Both of you need to have a plan in place where you can get out of the situation with minimal damage. This means you need to be able to financially be able to give it a week or two, have an agreement in place that if things don't work out, you're going to allow yourself or her to move out and find a place. And if you're renting a place together, you're going to work out the details of that where you're not just going to abandon the other person and leave them with all the rent. Okay, so you're going to have to get an easy out. If financially you cannot afford to pay rent on your own, then you probably shouldn't move in together. Okay, because if things don't work out, she has to move out and you're stuck paying $1,500 a month rent, but you can only afford to pay $750 a month rent, you got problems, okay? And that's going to cause you guys to have to stay living together in that situation, and that's not good because that puts pressure. The third thing is you need to share chores and errands in terms of grocery shopping, who does the dishes, who, throws the trash away, you know, who cleans, who does this, who does that. You need to work that out. You need to share them. Because if one person's doing everything, it's gonna bring animosity into the relationship when you live together. Those are the three musts. Things that you need to, things that are really make it a good situation, but are not necessary, but these will make things much more smooth. Number one is moving in a new place together, okay, versus moving in with you or you moving in with her, okay? Because you move in a place together, it's a neutral place. You move in with her, that's a tough situation because that's her fucking house, okay? And she moves in with you, it's your fucking house. So it's better to either buy a house together or rent a house together. This way it's neutral, okay? This way, you know, it's kind of like it's not – someone doesn't feel like they're getting intruded on, okay? Because we get defensive over our house. It's our house. We're used to living in our house for 5 years, and now someone else moves in. They move their shit in. They have their shit everywhere. It kind of pisses us off. The other thing is finances. How are you going to split the bills? Is it 50-50? If one person makes $100,000 a year and the other person makes $50,000 a year – that person who makes $50,000 a year, it may not be okay with splitting things 50-50. You see? So you have to work that out before you move in, because once you move in and then you don't agree on the finances, there's going to be animosity and that's going to cause friction in a relationship. These are things I've learned over the years. And, this all boils down to, fairness. Because if one person feels like they're getting screwed over, then it's going to cause animosity. It's going to cause a lack of trust in the relationship, and it can doom your relationship. So, I mean, these are things that I've learned, and these are things you need to think about. So it's a really it's really a big step to move in together, and you really should, you know, be patient with it and not just move in together like after a few months. You really need to get to know that person. Anything else to add, Matt?
Yeah, just quickly before we close, because not everybody's aware of this, but if you are in that situation, you are able to go to a lawyer and get something called a cohabitant agreement. It would be something similar, I guess, to like a prenup, right? When you're going to get married and it kind of lays out what if it fails. You can get an agreement, something that dictates, you know, when you move in together, what happens if it fails. So you can, there are things out there for you. It's becoming more popular now to do things like that. So for the guy, if he's worried about it, or girl, if you're worried about it, you can go get these things legally done. That way, if somebody does have to move out, there's no questions, there's no gray area. It's all there for you.
Appreciate you guys listening. Evolutionary.org. Please come and visit. Don't be shy. We'll talk to you guys next time.